had a distinguished 36-year career at Alcatel, one of the world's largest telecom technology and network deployment companies. He was most recently President and Chief Operating Officer of the company, leading more than 55,000 staff and responsible for operations in 130 countries. Mike also led Alcatel's team in the negotiation of the €221 billion merger with Lucent Technologies, which was completed in November 2006, before his decision to return to Australia in September 2007 and subsequently be appointed to run Invento.
Thanks very much, Anne, and good morning. It really is a pleasure to be here. In fact, as we were circling around Melbourne in thick fog, and the pilot was telling us we were likely to be diverted to Canberra. By the way, I probably don't need one more trip to Canberra. We were getting a little worried, but it is a pleasure. We managed to find a slot and get down. So I plan to talk about a couple of things today. First of all, just to provide you with an update on progress. What have we been doing for the last year in NBN Co? Where are we up to? And then, if I can, spend a little bit of time to address some myths, I think, that are floating around at the moment. I'll give you a view on those. But I was, in fact, very pleased to hear from John this morning that there is a forward path for NBN Co technology going forward, because I have read a report that on the radio this morning somebody said that network was going to be obsolete before it was built. So that was encouraging, so thanks for that, John. So if I can remind you, this is a very, very large engineering project we're doing. People focus on the construction, but there is a lot of deeply technical and complex engineering to do in the project, and we're engaged in that and have been for some time. Of course, every big engineering project such as this, you need to get the requirements definition right up front, and that is quite complex. And there's an interplay, I think, as most of you would realise, between the engineering and the technical decisions and the policy issues, and they're ongoing at the moment. They're continuing. So it's not a trivial job to get the definition of what has to be built correct, and that is an ongoing exercise to get it right. Then, of course, once you have that, you can do the product development, you can do the network design, the architecture, and I've been up in forums such as this talking about the types of architectures we would use. As I think most of you will know, Layer 2 Ethernet-based, going from premises to points of interconnect, just moving bits around in the network. In parallel with the architecture, the network itself, of course, is the OSS-BSS systems. And they are amongst the biggest, that is probably the biggest challenge the company faces in getting the OSS-BSS right. And it is always a thing that causes a telco, such as NBN Co, to stop and pause and think very carefully about it. They are tough things to get right. And we would have loved to be able to go out and pick up from somewhere in the world an already designed OSS-BSS system. It just simply wasn't possible, because nobody has really built this type of completely open access wholesale layer 2 network around the world. But getting the OSS-BSS right is very important. It's very important for the customers who will connect to this network, so that we can make sure they have all of the facilities they need to manage their end users on the platform that we will be providing. Once you do both the network design and you then have to convert that into a physical design on the ground, area by area, as you go out into the field, you've got to decide where the splitters are going, where the fibre distribution hub's going, where the cable's going to go. That's quite a big exercise to do that design. And then there's the construction that is required on that. And you will have seen that in Tasmania, we've already done some construction to 4,000 premises in three townships. And we're now, and I'll mention a bit of that as we go on, we're doing that in our five mainland first release sites. Now, while all that was going on, we were also building the company, because not so long ago we were, in fact, we only had one or two employees. So we've been building it from the ground up from that point in time, which means getting HR systems, IT systems, financial systems in place, getting accommodation, building a network operations centre and integration test centre, which is underway. And in parallel, we were developing our business case. And that has been, as you can imagine, for projects such as this, quite an interesting exercise. There's plenty of views on that, and we will be submitting that business case to the government at the end of this month. One thing I should say we are not doing is we're not focused on applications. And the reason we're not focused on applications is that we believe we've got a big enough job trying to build the network itself, but there needs to be a lot of work, obviously, on applications, especially applications in the health area and education area. There's a lot of benefits we believe that can flow from having this underlying platform for the nation. We will be looking at, from NBNCo's point of view, various benefits that come from this in those areas in order to better inform our product rollout and the types of functionality that we put in the network. So we won't ignore it completely. We will be, over the next few months, work done by us in those application areas, but not developing applications. So an area that people are always interested is in procurement. So I'll mention a couple of areas of those I've just touched on. It's always an area of interest. You would know that we have already let contracts for the GPON and the Ethernet equipment. They've been awarded for our ERP systems. But here's some more that are coming up, either coming up or we're right in the middle of. As I mentioned, our OSS, BSS, we're in negotiations with potential suppliers right now. Optical transmission is about to be awarded. The volume rollout construction, the RFP closes very shortly on that. And the passive hardware, that's the fibre cable and all accessories. And there's a lot of fibre we will obviously be using. There's in fact $2 billion worth of proposals which we're looking at right now. There's then the data centres, there's a wireless RFP we just issued, and we've got two satellites, one for a first release satellite solution and then for the long-term satellite solution. We did in fact have to pause in some of this activity during the caretaker period. There were some things in the caretaker period that we could continue with. There's some things that we really felt it appropriate given where the election was, that we didn't force suppliers to continue through that caretaker process. So we kind of put a hiatus in. When things were clear, we started up again. And we obviously took that into account as we looked at the timing. We're doing also a lot of industry engagement with retail service providers and potential wholesale service providers. In fact, I think we probably doubled the number of hours that's on this chart. We're probably up to more than 200 hours of deep dive sessions with service providers. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. We're also spending a lot of time, as you would expect, with the ACCC in consulting them very carefully. I mentioned the product development. That is quite a tough job. We've released three product overview specs some time ago for the fibre, the wireless and the satellite services, and a very detailed product specification on the fibre services. And we will continue to release more and more details as we go forward. We've been listening, by the way, very closely to comments that come back to us on those products and incorporating them in the product definitions. So that's been going on. So now, to the construction, we have first these five mainland first release sites, which you see there, and seven Tasmanian first release sites. There's about 10,000 premises in the mainland we're doing in the first release sites, about 10,000 in Tasmania. We do a design and then a construct. And as you know, we also have the pre-release, the Tasmanian pre-release, which we now have about 500 services to 400 premises in Tasmania. And about 170 of those are active. Four service providers are now providing services in Tasmania, and Telstra has recently signed a master services agreement. In the first release sites now in the mainland, these are the five sites, and they've all started in construction. The design's been going on for a while. One thing I want to emphasise that we are doing in these first release sites, we are testing exhaustively all of our safety systems. So proactively reporting of incidents, and one thing I've learned in being the previous board on the safety committee, how important it is to get proactive reporting. You've got to build the culture that people have no fear at all of reporting incidents, whether they cause an injury or a first aid treatment or not. You want them reporting any incidents that they think could even potentially have caused a problem. So that's what we're putting in motion, and that is actually happening. Those systems are building up. They're working very well. And we will continue that focus on safety. Every one of our weekly management meetings, we start talking about safety. Every one of our board meetings, we begin by talking about safety. So this work is now underway. It complements, we learned some things in the Tasmanian rollout, which, by the way, the Tasmanian pre-release came in on time and just slightly under budget from what we had expected, and we're hoping to do exactly the same with the first release sites. Then we move to the second release sites, in which we add now another 14 mainland sites, so we end up with 19 mainland sites, and we expand some of the existing first release sites, well, so we end up with about a couple of 100,000 customers on those second release sites. And you can see here, this is a good mixture of regional and urban rollouts. So there is already, in our first and second release site planning, quite a good mixture of that. We are now doing a three-year rollout plan, and that will be embedded in the document that we give, the corporate plan that we give to the government at the end of this month. It will be for their consideration to see if the rollout plan meets the shareholder or the government's objectives. Looking at consultation, which I mentioned, we're going to continue with the product overviews. And this is, of course, in addition to the work we're doing with ACCC, we're going to continue that work with wholesale and retail service providers. We're going to put out a wholesale broadband agreement. This is a consultation paper which sets out NBNCo's non-discrimination commitments. Remember, we're building a wholesale network. We have to make sure it's non-discriminatory. We will be setting that out in the consultation paper. And then we're working on things like connection protocol papers, which allow people to be able to comment on our proposals for forecasting, service qualification, placement of orders, and those types of things that are required to connect to the NBNCo network. We will then be putting out a number of papers and conducting some trials in 2011 on onboarding. And that's a process so that people, RSPs, can have a good experience as they come onto the NBNCo. So all of the processes, the interfaces, the B2B systems, the OSS, BSS interfaces, all of those, that will be trialled and all tested during 2011. And we'll be producing information papers that describe all that and releasing those within the next month or so. We are also now, obviously, in putting forward our business case to the shareholder by the end of this month, finalising our pricing, which we are discussing with the ACCC, and we will need to be releasing that in due course. And finally, there are some issues that are still subject to considerable consultation, and there is a process on the points of interconnect, and I'll say a little bit more about that in just a second, what that is, but we've now, the government has asked us to set up a process with the ACCC of consultation, which will provide an input back into government by the end of November, 30th of November. And just to remind you what this is all about, since points of interconnect are going to be quite topical, if you remember what we in NBNCo are doing, we are moving traffic bits from a premise to a point of interconnect. That's all. At layer 2, no higher, just layer 2, from a premise to a point of interconnect. The question is, how many of those points of interconnects are there, and where should they be located? And there are lots of different views. As you can imagine, depending on where you sit in the industry, you may have strong views about how many of these points of interconnect should be, and where they should be located. Our intention is to have uniform pricing between a point of interconnect and a premise. So just depending on where you put those point of interconnects, it obviously has an effect on industry structure and the overall retail pricing that can be delivered. It's a complex area, and it requires a balance, and all of these things require a balance between retail competition and backhaul competition. So you can imagine, if you have centralised smaller numbers of point of interconnect, you're going to get much more retail competition above our layer 2 network. If you have distributed points of interconnect and a large number of them, you'll have more backhaul competition, but probably less retail competition, because it'll be more similar to what we have today with the copper network. So that's an issue which the ACCC and ourselves will be working together and producing, will be guided by the ACCC, of course, on that, and supporting a consultation paper which they will release. So these are, in fact, there's just a set, just so you can understand what we're talking about when we say these points of interconnect. It is possible at the extreme to have every one of these fan sites, close to 1,000 fan sites, fibre access nodes, as a point of interconnect. In principle, that's possible. Likewise, you could be the other end and have them aggregate all of the traffic up together and hand off. We could hand off to retail service providers at centralised points of interconnect. Our intention, of course, no matter which way that turns out, is that we will provide a common point of interconnect. So at a point of interconnect, you can reach any customer on any of the technologies in that area. And in a given area, you may have an end user who's being served by fibre, or served by fixed wireless, or served by satellite. Remember, 93% of end users will be on fibre, 4% on fixed wireless, and 3% on satellite. Our intention is that a retail service provider could reach any one of those end users within a given region on any of those three technologies from the same point of interconnect, and hopefully using the same processes, the same systems, the same interfaces to OSS BSS, the same B2B interfaces. So let me now, if I can, just turn to a couple of myths. The first one, if I can pick up the internal wiring. Okay, now if we've, you've probably seen reports in the media that it's going to be between $3,000 and $6,000 to rewire the homes. I think probably most of you in this industry look at that and know what the reality is. But this is getting some currency. It's floating around in the media, it's floating around in the radio talk shows. We've done our best to dispel this in talking to different folks in the media. Some of that's effective and some of it's far less so. The reality is, and probably the best thing for me to give is not just a theoretical example, but in fact in Tasmania now, we have very few, I think it was about 3% of the customers who have now been connected who have decided to do anything about their internal wiring. I mean, they can choose to if they want to reticulate, you know, take advantage of what they consider is going to be higher speeds and reticulate around, but most people are using Wi-Fi in their homes anywhere, wherever it works. Now, of course, in an older building or one with thick walls, the radio propagation is a bit of a problem through the walls, so they may, in fact, in that case, use Cat5 or Cat6 or whatever. But the when NBN comes along and puts a network termination unit in a premise, there is no reason why any wiring has to be redone. Simply, what's got plugged into the DSL modem at the moment, which is normally most of them are Wi-Fi routers as well, can plug into a residential gateway, which is connected to the NTU. So there is no rewiring. And in fact, once again in Tasmania, what we saw, that was, in fact, less than 0.5% of people who are connecting have decided to do anything about putting any wiring into the NTU. They're going with cordless phones. So people are, in fact, upgrading some of their facilities, but it's a relationship between them and their retail service provider. And it's just simply not an area that we've heard any complaints about or any concerns. And I think, as John said in the in his presentation, there is a lot of work to be done in the migration by retail service providers, and we're working with them on that, but we really do expect not a huge amount of work in the home. Now, that of course changes if somebody wants to put IPTV in the same way as they will get a set-top box from their IPTV provider, and they may want to do some rewiring there. Well, of course, if they're changing their services, that they may do some rewiring, or they may once again do it wirelessly, or Ethernet over power in the home. There's lots of different options there. So the whole business of $3,000 to $6,000 per home, I simply have no idea where it came from. It just isn't factual at all. Now, the other question about wireless keeps coming up again and again, so I keep addressing it, but it keeps popping up, so I'll just repeat the same thing I've said before. I think we're going to have both. And we both networks are going to be struggling to keep up with the demand. Certainly, we're struggling to keep up with the demand of people wanting the service pretty quickly. We just can't roll it out fast enough. What I've got on these charts is data from the Australian Bureau of Statistics that's just been released relatively recently. And what you can see there is what we'd expect, which is the number of broadband subscribers went up a little. The number of subscribers, about 2%. The number of wireless broadband subscribers went up much more, 22%. But what was maybe a little surprising to you is the actual data downloaded on Wireless Australia and on fixed line, basically DSL, there was quite a difference. So in other words, 1% on wireless and 25% jump on fibre. And I think this is a good example of where things are going to go. We will desperately need both technologies. We will use both technologies. Wireless will keep expanding, but as we download increasing amounts of video, the fixed line network is going to come to the fore. And we're going to see more and more of that as time moves on. I've shown this chart lots of times before. This is just a simple extrapolation of back from the days of 1985. And by the way, it wasn't that long ago. I was just speaking to someone the other day in the US who was in a telco, a big telco, in 1999, contemplating whether or not there would be much of a take-up between the 56 kilobit per second modems they had and this new technology that was about to be introduced called DSL. And they were seriously wondering around, this was a telco person, seriously wondering what would the applications that would cause the shifts, because 56 kilobit per second was fine for email they were doing at that time. So this change we see here now, we're kind of about that same point where we're seeing increasing amounts of video. What I want to say, and those two dotted lines, by the way, there are saying, if we don't need this fibre network, this is what you expect demand in speeds to do. What I would like to stress, though, today, is in putting this up again, is that we are not assuming in our business case that continued extrapolation. We take a much more conservative view of where speeds are going to go. Likewise, we're not extrapolating downloads in gigabytes per month linearly up on an exponential axis, on a logarithmic axis. We're taking a more conservative view, much more conservative view in our business case than that. But the good news is, with a fibre network, while we're taking a conservative view, if it did happen to follow this trend, then the fibre network can quite easily cope with it. It's being dimensioned that it can cope without any doubts with this kind of continued growth if we were to see it. And finally, I'd like to say, just talking about, well, we hear now a bit of media hysteria about a decommissioning of the copper network. Well, yes, the copper network has first started some 50 or 60 years ago. Some parts of it are getting quite old. Telcos around the world are not putting in copper anymore. Somebody even told me they visited Zimbabwe recently and they were rolling out fibre, weren't putting any copper. So almost everywhere in the world now doing new fixed line rollouts are doing it with fibre. It makes some sense. Most of those places, most of those companies around the world are looking at various ways of bit by bit retiring their copper. So that's what's likely to happen here in Australia. We will be decommissioning the copper with the agreement, if it goes forward with Telstra. As we roll out fibre, we'll decommission the copper. For the end user, they get all the same services and then some. So I'm really not sure why they would be so worried about a copper line going away if they've got a fibre line. With competitive prices, with all sorts of opportunities, and without the $3,000 to $6,000 internal wiring cost, which just is not there. So I think we should take kind of a realistic view of this. This is the way technology moves. Services moves on. We, of course, have to deal with all the issues around retiring the copper network and bringing in a new infrastructure platform, which we expect will serve the nation well as the copper network did for the last 50 years. A fibre network will serve the nation for the next 50 years. So thanks for your time and attention.
Any questions? Time for one question from Mike from the floor.
Mike, in slide 11, you put up a slide that talks about fixed access and mobile broadband.
Yes.
And clearly the discussion of mobile broadband is from a wireless perspective and the increasing use and the growth of that versus fixed. In the context of the network that you're planning to build, how do you differentiate your understanding of the growth of mobile broadband as a service in metro and other areas versus the requirement to build a fixed wireless network in regional and rural areas in a cost-effective way?
Okay, well, we expect to be doing both, of course. We expect to be doing both in rural and metro. Okay, so it's not just building out in a fixed line network in rural. We're doing it in metro as well. I'm make sure I've understood your question correctly. If you're asking the difference between the wireless network we're going to use and mobile broadband in the cities, what we're doing is we're picking up 4% of premises that it's too expensive to reach with fibre. Those we can do with wireless, but it is a fixed wireless service. It's not a mobile service. It just replicates a fixed line service. In other words, there's an antenna on a premise, and we're just using radio access as the medium for providing that equivalent fixed line service. It doesn't provide a service to a handset, it doesn't roam, it doesn't do any of those things. It's an equivalent fixed line service, but it just uses radio technologies rather than fibre technologies. Now, did I get the gist of your question?
No, you've answered the question. There's just every time someone puts up a slide and they talk about wireless, they get confused about what you've just spoken about as a fixed service,
yep,
versus what mobile broadband brings and as a value offering.
Yep.
And that continues to be confused in the press.
It is, and thanks for the question. It does continue to be confused, and thank you for making it clear. Let me also say that the dimensioning we're doing on the wireless part of the network is very different from what a normal mobile operator would do on their network. We're dimensioning for what we call very large, average, busy hour throuputs. So the whole intention is we're not offering mobility. What we're offering is throughput capability. So speed in the cell sites we put down, we're not just providing a 12 megabits at the cell centre, we're guaranteeing 12 megabits at the cell edge. So everybody in the wireless footprint will get at least 12 megabits per second in terms of speed, and we are dimensioning the network so they will get very good download capabilities. But so the network is a fixed wireless network. It doesn't have all the things that a mobile network does, all the handoffs, all the roaming, all of that kind of stuff that you need. Very different services. So thanks for the question.
Thank you much.
Okay,
Mark.
Thank you.
Turning now to a presentation from Evan Slattery.
Evan is the founder of NetsDC Proprietary Limited. Prior to this, Evan was co-founder and director of Pipe